When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
All right, here we are. Wine pod. This has never happened. We've done plenty of wine pods, but we've never been on camera for these wine pods. And the other thing... The other thing with these wine pods is you have had the good idea of usually like, hey, let's have like a glass before we get started. And that usually would turn into like, we'd cash the whole bottle before we start. And we're like drunk before we even say hello. Now, I mean, this is full. We've not had anything yet.
Yeah. You know what? I think I prefer the, like, we drink before we
talk. Yeah, me too.
But I do think it's going to be good to show what we do here.
That's why I felt like
we need to show the people what we do.
I don't know why, like, for some reason, I'm like, these people think you're doubting us that we were actually drinking. And like, I opened it and I put a little like cork in it because I want people to see and hear the, you know, that wasn't a good cork pop, but like, I want people to know that we're actually like, we're boozing, we're doing this, you know?
Yeah, we want, it's fun to watch
the wine come out.
Watch the wine come out. And
is this the, do we have the awkwardness with no wine being drunk? Are we like at, remember like the first seventh grade dance you ever went to?
Yes.
The first dance with girls when you're pseudo interested in girls and like, you don't know. Everybody's playing the wall.
Yeah, you don't want to get to the middle. Because if you go the middle, it's on, then you have to do it. You have to dance.
Right.
And that's a bad feeling.
Right. Okay. I'm big on being even, Steven. The one on the right is, I need to talk into the mic when I'm doing this here. But no, those dances, the first seventh grade dances, like by the end of them, you're not full skill, like genuine pony anybody.
You kind of are. But it takes 2 hours to get there. Yeah.
But by the end, you're doing like the, you know, the awkward, so like hands on hips, like
this is what I don't
Casey
remember.
And JoJo all my life playing.
I want to say, no, that's not, I don't think that happened. No, I think that seventh grade, you never make it to the slow dance.
Ninth
grade was the first time where we got.
Ninth grade, it went down, dog.
Ninth grade,
Back That Ass Up had come out. I'm pretty sure Juvenile Back That Ass Up had just come out.
Yes, I think that's probably right.
Do you think they 99? Played Juvenile Back That Ass Up?
Yes, of course.
At the dance, though? I mean, that's a pretty... Like, imagine right now, you're in charge of the music, and it's a bunch of ninth graders. And are you seriously going to... Girl, you look good. Won't you back that ass
that
up?
It was top 40. I think if it's in the top 40, not like, we're going to X-rated radio here. Like, this was top 40 music.
Rex and Effects, Rump Shaker?
Yeah, these were all fine. But I think you didn't really... I just remember not a lot of like slow dancing. You didn't really dance with girls. You danced by girls.
Yeah. I thought there was
a slow dance. There was no grinding.
And there was no, on the slow dance, you kept a good foot of distance.
I mean, you were church dance.
It
was church dancing. Like
you never, I mean, it was never full fledged.
Never came in.
No, everybody had the ass out going big time.
Yes, it was a butt out.
But I remember that. By the end of it, though, you're kind of intermingling and you're like, man, that was awesome.
It takes like 2 hours to get there. And then you have so much fun. Then the dance is over. And you're
right.
Wow, that was fun. Whoa. Next time we should just go out. And then you never.
And then the next time it takes
on
a
wall.
Long time to do it. And it's, I don't get it.
You have to have guts as a guy to go out there and dance. The girls will all go dance with each other. Yeah. The guys stand there.
Guys can't dance with each other. Yeah. See, that's kind of BS. Like, girls can go dance with each other and it's socially acceptable. Like, guys, you can't go out there with like the bros.
Get off me, dude. Don't grind me, man. Get the hell off me.
But hold on. We have probably debunked that. Me and you have aged, me and you got no problem going out there on the dance floor, just us two.
Yeah, but we do moves. We do moves. We don't grind each other. Like,
well,
girls,
of course not. We're not grinding.
Girls will go. We'll go out there and we'll do our moves.
Oh, we'll do our thing. Yeah, we're dancing near each other and playing and gassing each other's moves.
Yeah, yeah.
Very supportive of one another.
We like each other's moves, but
let me ask you. Minimal.
I got a serious question for you. When was the last time you danced? Like, really went out there and you danced?
Well, Vegas pool party at some point, probably. But does that count?
How many years ago was that?
2 years ago, probably.
2 years ago? Maybe.
Where me and you were the only ones, by the way, the only ones at this pool party, the only ones that actually got out of the pool and walked over
that party to fuzzy.
The bathroom and peed in the bathroom. Oh, Remember that?
They all peed in the pool.
And it took us to leave. Like, hold on. I almost wanted to grab the mic from DJ Mustard, whoever was doing it, and be like, hold on. Why are we the only ones going to the bathroom? All of you should be exiting the pool and going to the bathroom as well.
There was a consensus in that pool. And the consensus was we're all peeing in it. And we weren't a part of that decision. Just,
I can't do that. I used to whiz in the pool all the time when I was a little kid.
You're like four.
But like even now, I mean, I'm not whizzing in a pool.
The pee to water content.
Here, hold on. Okay, cheers, my friend.
Cheers.
Hey, cheers first, to everybody watching, listening.
First wine pod.
On the video. We're already off to a good start. We said we were going to, we're like 6 minutes in. This wasn't on the list of things to do.
We started talking about seventh grade dances and I was.
Seventh grade dances were great. The ninth grade dance was the best, but, and then high school dances were fantastic. But no, everybody's peeing in the pool in Vegas. It's gross. How is it?
That's nice. Really nice.
That's good, right? Tempranillo. These are from Spain. So we're getting our Pau Gasol on, bro. Ricky Rubio up in this thing.
I feel like I've got, what's it called? The tilde?
Yeah. we got that Barcelona thing going on right now.
That I'll say that, you know, we had our one trip to Europe.
Yeah.
Your wife, me, you, and our friend Bub, we all spent about, 4 or 5 days in Spain.
It's amazing.
Something about the wine when you're there, it was
so good. And that the whole siesta thing is real. Like the city shuts down at like 4 o'clock till 6 or 7 o'clock. And then everybody, we had reservations for dinner one night at, I'm pretty sure midnight. It was midnight.
Yeah.
We were eating dinner at like 12:40.
It was bizarre. At night. It was bizarre, but I think when you build in the nap during the day, it's kind of nice.
That's kind of our style. Just, I'm a grown ass man, but I still like, if I can catch 20 minutes. See, but I'm one of those guys. See, are you like my wife can't do a 20 minute nap. She has to do like a 60 minute, 40, like 90 minute nap. I can shut my eyes for 20 minutes and I'm good.
I can do it all.
I can nap. You're a napping. A versatile but napper, huh?
Somebody told me that the sleep specialists recommend you do 30 or you do an hour 30. You don't do an hour. It's something about you know.
The cycle in the middle of the,
So you don't wake up groggy.
That makes sense.
I feel like I'm like an hour is like my mark. I'm like,
I can do 20 to 30 and I'm good. I just need that. Your brain shuts off for a second. Then I'm ready to attack.
20 is not enough. I don't.
Sometimes that's all you can get though, Doc.
True. I mean, the power nappers, I give them respect for doing it.
I just respect that. I respect people that are willing to just as an adult be like, I need a nap.
I'm a full-fledged napper though.
I mean, that's why me and you always room on road
trips. I'm a classic napper. That's classic where we are. Nappers nap a long time if they can.
There's no question about that. So we have an unbelievable amount of questions came in. Shouts out to everybody that participated. Facebook, Twitter, email, a bunch of awesome questions.
Yeah,
you can tell a great way to get the snapshot of people's mood and kind of the vibe of where people are at is kind of what the line of questioning is, the questions are like. A lot of Husker football, a lot of serious Husker football. We'll get into that. We got some silly ones to get into at the end. We wanted to save those so we can get a little buzz before you have questions.
Are we going to do we need to show the poor every week or do you think we can come in hot? You know,
I don't. I mean, I
think with a couple glasses down. I think people kind of want to see the.
I think they want to see it from beginning to end.
or maybe we do a bottle and then this will be the second.
Maybe we do the pre-show. This is the pre, I mean, they do a pre-game show before the game. Do we need to do
we used to do pre-game in college.
We need to do.
Before we got to the bars, we weren't going to the bars.
No.
You know.
On, sober? Yeah. Zero? Have another
well
Gatorade
in? Seventh grade dance.
Crazy?
You know?
I mean, it's ridiculous. Okay. A couple of orders of business. You came in. I can tell you came in and you had a lot. Like, I can read you. It's got a lot on your test right now on a lot of different things with Husker football, with different stuff going on. I mean, do you have, because we're now, what are we, 2 days removed from the game?
Yeah.
It's been an interesting couple of days here.
I mean, I don't know how many conversations you've had with just like people around, you know, on the street. I bet you I've had 5 to 10, just random, just chatting with people, either, you know, I work with or just on the street. And man, I mean, people are,
it's bleak.
It's a weird place right now.
It's bleak out there.
And I guess I'm not quite to the place that everybody else is. And I guess I wonder why that is. Why is everybody so in the doom and gloom that it's like, it's over tight. It's like, it's almost like Nebraska football as a institution is gone. It's
right.
Like, it's very deep and dark.
What's weird is I think it was Damon asked Sam McEwen this question on the radio, and it was a perfectly worded question of, it's weird how everybody is kind of, the reaction has been seen, you know, even for us, it's same movie, seen this all before. Yeah. But yet everyone's reacting like they've never seen this before. Does that make sense? Which is kind of a weird thing, like to kind of add up or kind of line up there. And I think I'd imagine it's because a lot of people just assumed, there's been this assumption that it was going to be better and you hoped it would be better. And and some people, I know you talked yourself into it being better. And at least for one game, it wasn't. Maybe that's.
But it's like there's 11 games left. There's 11 games left. And I mean, I watched the game. It wasn't as if we didn't have a chance to beat Illinois. It's like we made some terrible mistakes and gave away a game. I think those are still different things to me. Like if you are the team that should win, it doesn't excuse your bad performance, but it's still like you're not the team that shouldn't win.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like when we play Oklahoma, we shouldn't win.
Right.
But we should win against more teams than not. And that tells me that like we're still not, it's not doom and gloom yet if you're still the team that's like favored to win.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, at least to a Husker fan who maybe, and I could be just like way too much of a homer, but I still think if that's the case, then you can make the improvements.
I'm just not ready to. I know we use the word obituary many times. I'm just not ready to go there yet.
I think it's a mistake to go there.
I mean, even on, you know, you listen to the Yahoo Sports guys, Pete Thamel, Dan Wetzel, Pat Forty, they started their podcast first 10 minutes just trashing Nebraska and then ended the conversation throwing out candidates for who the next coach is going to be. And it's like, whoa, what that just feels.
I think,
I get it. I'm not naive to the situation, but even still, I'm not ready to start being like, who's the next guy? Whoa.
I think as a fan base, cause that's what we are. We're all fans here talking about Husker football. And I think it's such a mistake to not try to defend the program and keep, you know, what we said we want to do is, you know, give somebody time finally. And I think it's such a mistake to fall into the trap of, you know, restart the clock again. Like this weird thing that we always do and say, we're not going to do it. And then we do it again. Like that's what we're doing. Like we're overreacting and not letting something play out.
Well, I agree with that. Now.
Yeah.
Like let's say you get into November and it's been like, then if you want to go there, that makes a little more sense to me. I just think to go there now feels way premature.
It does. And I think there's two, like letting it go through the year is letting it play out. But I think at the same time, I think when everybody is like, all they're talking about is fire, 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 you can't, it affects things. It affects what happens.
And it absolutely does.
And that's the part where I go, if you're a Husker fan and you say you want to play it out, like you, then you should try to be supportive in a way, right? Like it's, I think it's like almost like a duty thing. Like it's your duty to try to be supportive and root for the program, show up to games. And, you know, like that's the part I never understood is like, I'm just done with what I'm like, I think I saw, it was like Adrian Martinez said something in the paper. He said like, you know, we're going to go out there and have fun. We hope people come out, watch us. It's football,
right?
It's fun. It's football. Like, I think they're missing something about like, they're taking it too personal where it's like, it's fun. It's football. Like you don't have to make it something that it's not. Or
sure.
Whatever.
It's everybody's in a weird state of mind. And there are a couple things I wanted to hit on. Before, I mean, so far, we haven't even gotten into one mailbag question here. 15
we'll
minutes.
Get there.
We'll get there. This is good, huh?
God, that's good wine.
Real quick, though, a couple of things. We don't need to go forever on this. The whole, I'm sure you read the quote because it's flabbergasted a lot of people, including me to a certain extent. The whole thing with Frost talking about how he mentioned after the game how we guessed they were going to be in an odd front and they came out in an even front and it wiped out half our playbook. That just seemed, we hit on it a little bit in the recap pod, but when you hear him, were you surprised to hear him say it wiped out half the playbook? And maybe I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill, you know, but that also just seems kind of like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. If they were expecting one thing and they had prepared to like that, okay, you got to throw out everything that you kind of thought it was, and here's the backup plan.
But my thing is, so all those plays that were four and an odd front, you can't. I guess I'm just surprised that there are plays that you cannot, you don't know how to block or what to do.
I think it's just a little bit different than I remember. Like if you think back to high school, it was like you had a play and you had rules, and they come out and didn't matter what the defense was in, you're like, well, let's just,
oh yeah,
this is, you had your sort of rules and, but you only had 10 plays or something, you know? Yeah. So, but I think it's a little different with their offense in the sense of, you know, they're not in a good situation. Like they don't want to run into a bad situation potentially. Right. Versus like, I think they have the plays they like versus each front and they don't work as well. Like, so it's not that they can't run them.
Right.
It's just like, they feel like it's a bad play.
Yeah.
I guess that's the part that it makes sense to me. It's like, well, yeah, you have the plays you like and the ones you don't. It doesn't mean you technically can't run it. You can.
Right.
You just don't want to.
I've had this like dueling thing in my mind of like succumbing to the, like, you gotta be kidding me. Is this guy a joke? But then I'm also like,
but see, this is the part where Frost is like, he was trying to be like the Bill Belichickian last week, we give him nothing.
Right.
And then he went back to giving him something. And when you're losing, they take that as this guy,
you don't know what you're doing.
And that's where it's like, now it's like, well, don't say anything. Right. So I give people a lot of grace in these moments. I always just say, look, I know you probably didn't mean it in a way like that people are taking it. So I don't overreact to that.
Okay. Did you see today? Because there was a little bit of concern of like, is the sellout streak going to continue? Is it going to continue? A couple of donors bought up, I think it was 2,400 tickets. So the sellout streak lives for another day. What? I don't know if you and I have ever really, like, do you care about the sellout streak? What do you think about the sellout streak?
I care about it. I think it's cool. I mean, it's not like the end all be all, but like, it's cool. You can say that we've been doing something for generations and nobody else can say that. And, I mean, I think it's so smart. They buy up the tickets and they give them to underprivileged youth. So it's like, who's going to complain about it?
That's a problem.
Are you going to complain?
Because
what a great move.
Because you want to go, oh, that's BS, a way to fib the sellout streak.
But it's going to teach, it's going to show these kids that they can be Husker fans. They're going to give these
acts. I mean,
it's great. Right. I mean, hey, to me, it's like we're buying time to win some games finally. And then like the streak will continue on its own. But it's been a weird couple of years.
Let's be
right. It's been a freaking weird couple.
My analogy for the sellout streak has been, it's, I can understand why there's a lot of people that hold on to this sellout streak hard, because it's kind of the only, it's the last living thing that combines the past to the present.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good.
And thought. It's that that's hard to let go. And my analogy was when Hanks and Castaway gets he gets on the boat to leave the island, and he has that moment where he takes us, he stands up and he looks back at the island, yeah, and it's starting to fade away, and he almost gets emotional because it's hard to let go of that.
Yeah,
but sometimes you got to let go of it. And so I don't know, I mean, I think the sellout streak is cool. I think we all know, anybody that's been in the stadium knows that there, it's not been a complete sellout for a while. It's kind of a sellout, yeah, streak by technicality, but nevertheless, it's still their tickets sold. That's what it's really about. But I was really worried that it was gonna be done this weekend, and it's, yeah, it's not.
I mean, with the pandemic, with some of the just apathy setting in, like
it's a perfect storm. And
it's
Fordham,
a perfect storm. Yeah, I mean,
shitty game
after the loss,
after a bad loss. People are there's a lot of angst around the program, COVID, new mask stuff with, yeah, the stadium. That's a lot of stuff working against you.
For sure. And I, this is the part that you throw all that stuff out the door, all of it. The generation coming up, Nick. So the generation that's dying out, that's in their 80s and 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever. They were Husker glory years forever, right?
Oh, yeah.
Truly, like, they lived it. The generation coming up, they didn't get the Husker glory years. People younger than us. And even people our age, like, you just don't think about buying tickets the same way. Like, or, you know, like, you want to go. I want to go. I go every week. But, you know, to pay a big chunk of money, that's the part that gets a lot harder.
Totally.
And parking, and like, it's a big deal. It's big all day commitment. And I think a good chunk of people under 30, they don't understand it, 'cause they got so many other options.
Right.
The people that grew up were like, what were you going to do on the weekend? Right.
Right.
And
well, in some ways that was the only way to see the game too.
You couldn't see the game.
The only way you got to see Nebraska play was you had to go to the game.
Yeah.
Obviously that's not the case anymore. So that
Nick, you just, there's infinite possibilities for what you can do with your time now.
Oh yeah.
And it just wasn't that way. So yeah, you couldn't see the game. You didn't have as many things to do. And, you know, like I said, it was the glory time, the glory years, right? And now it's just different. Like, you have, we're not in the glory years right now. We're in a down cycle, hoping to come out.
Now it'd be,
well, there's an infinite distraction.
I'm curious to see what attendance looks like in 10 to 15 years across the board, not just for Nebraska, right, football. I just think
that's what I mean.
Yeah. Like, this isn't
all teams, all sports.
This isn't just, we're talking about Nebraska football. This isn't just a Nebraska football conversation though. Like, it goes beyond that.
Like, I don't care if you're Ohio State. I don't care if you're Michigan. I don't care if you're Alabama, like, if you're like the top school in the country, like, you'll be able to sell tickets. But if you're not in the top five, like, if this next generation is just different, they just don't think about it the same way. And so, like, it's going to be the big discussion was like, do all these stadiums that are 70, 80, 90,000 like ours, you go down to 50, right? So if you go from 90 to 60 or 50, like, we'll sell out just fine. Like, we'll have plenty of people that
I think that's probably the right thing to do, to be honest with you.
Well, it was so, like, we spent the whole 2000s
expand, you know,
and then in a blink, the way we think changes. And
well, think of right now, if all of a sudden you had to build a stadium, like, you just had an empty plot of land, you're building Nebraska football's new Memorial Stadium, the capacity would not be 90 to 85,000.
And it's interactive, it's got
the restaurants. Students are on your ass. You, yeah, got alcohol there.
You, yeah, got some restaurants, totally. And you got some things that make it fun outside of just the game. But, like, yeah,
I would sell out to making parking and, like, flow around the stadium easy.
I think I'd have a place called Tailgate Land.
I mean, seriously though,
where it's just like the ultimate, like, I think you build a place. It's like, this is the ultimate tailgate.
And I think you build that area and you get enough people together, enough city planners, enough smart people to develop the perfect traffic flow of the how flow, things move. Because if I know I'm not, everybody hate, I've got to wear like, parking will keep my ass at home. Like if something, parking, waiting, walking, like I have gotten lazy with that stuff. And if I know something's going to be simple and relatively quick and relatively fast, that will be like, okay, I'll go.
I mean, we've been lucky enough that we've had a great tailgate spot. It's one of our family friends' spots, and they've always let us have one
a beer
of them
or two.
And so we have a parking spot there that we get to go to, and it's catty corner from the stadium.
Yeah,
it made a huge difference, but you got to get there early. I absolutely love it, but we got, you know, a good spot, and like I guess it gets harder, like you say, when you haven't established something with people you know. But I think our generation is really going to miss out if we don't, especially our generation, the one younger, because I think our generation's still in. I think it's the generation just below us and below that that are like, they're gonna miss this.
I know.
And I know. It's just too bad. Too bad they haven't got to experience it quite the same.
Before we go into the questions, the other thing I don't remember. I saw there was some little nugget coming out of the Monday practice that they stopped playing music at practice. Did you guys listen to me? That's a new, you know, there's certain things like the music at practice thing did not, I think came around maybe 3, 4, 5 years after I was done playing.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I think,
like even the pros, did you have it?
The first time I had it was in the pros. Okay. I was at Cleveland. And they played music.
They played rock steady.
They played rock. I told you about that, didn't I? They played rock steady, and everybody was dancing in line. I was like, "This is great." I mean, but
Whispers rock steady.
The Whispers. Bam, bam. Got to rock steady. Rock and steady, and we were all dancing. That was the first time I was like, "This is amazing." But it was only during warmups. Like we warmed up,
right?
Like practice warmups. And then it was off during the, I mean, you didn't all practice long, like have like,
that's what I don't know. Are they playing music like the whole practice?
I think a lot of it.
You don't want to be Johnny No Fun, but at the same time, like,
the first time we incorporated sound ever was the Hawk Center.
Yep.
Callahan put in the speakers and made like blaring crowd noise. That was the first time we used.
So there was a purpose for it for the game.
But Nick, before that, like for football forever, nobody did that.
No,
that was the first time we were able to do that. And it was kind of bizarre. We're like, what is going on? You know, it's kind of weird, but now I think it's the norm. And I think here's the issue. Like I've heard workout dudes say this, like the like serious workout guys, they won't put in, their iPods, whatever, AirBuds, and they don't want to listen to music because they think it's a crutch.
Yeah.
It's like a weird mental thing, right? They want to be as tough mentally as possible so they don't listen to music. I think that's almost what's happening in Nebraska. You're like, hey, no crutches at all. You're getting the silent treatment. Like, well, bring your own energy.
I know. You got to bring your own energy. There's something to that. Yeah. I mean, now the counter argument is like, well, music gets people energized and it's still energy regardless of where it comes from. But at the same time, there is something too. Like one of the things that I felt like my role was every level of sport I played, from playing with you basketball growing up, Lincoln Southeast football, basketball, even at Kansas Creighton, was like, I was the energy giver. I remember Coach Self would talk to me about that. He would be like, get him going.
Yeah. Nick,
I'd have to come into practice, you know, bouncing, hitting guys, talking to guys, getting them up. Honestly, like the music would have like replaced me in some ways, you know?
Yes and no. Yes, it kind of, it's like, say, it's a crutch. And in a way, it takes away from
the interact. Like, I think there's something too. The other thing too is it takes away from the player to player connection, bond, communication of like, you got to talk, you do got to get each other up. You do got to communicate, you know, you can't just be dancing to rock steady and that's it. You know, like you do got to kind of talk to each other and get each other going and connect. Yeah. So I understand all that. I mean, maybe we're lame, but I saw that. And I thought that was interesting.
I think it's like it's a psychological thing.
Yes.
I kind of understand it.
Because there's a line like it's. You do want to get, you got to bring energy and you got to get the energy up, but this isn't dick around and dance to music and listen to music time. You know what I mean?
I think here's the truth of it. And let's be real. When you play the music, a lot of times it does like lend itself to dicking around.
I know
I would kind of fall trapped to that, but I think it's I kind of like what they're doing is like, look, their issue is mindset.
Yeah.
It's like they've got a hurdle they got to overcome with this, like, we can't figure out how to get out of our own way. So they need to try some things.
I agree.
I'm fine with it. Like,
so am I.
Hey, you turn off the music, like do some things, but we got to learn how to win games that are winnable, like last game, and not beat ourselves.
Right.
And maybe that's stupid little things like turn off music. Go.
You might as well try whatever you're doing. You know, you maybe need to examine what you're doing and be like, okay, maybe music. We need to look at that. Okay, you ready to do this thing?
Wine.
Oh, I told you, Pau Gasol. Shouts out to Pau Gasol with this wine here. I mean, goodness, Ricky. Are you gonna do it? Okay,
This is Ricky Rubio brand here. Oh boy.
Okay, hooky boy up. A couple Facebook questions. Get things started. Brett Altman, former offensive lineman, Knight Pride. Shouts out
there
to
we
Brett. Oh. This is probably for you, Bo. How'd the call with Frank go? We talked about reversing the curse on the last on the last recap pod. Have you called Frank? We got a lot of people. I have multiple people like, okay, where and when is the first reverse the curse meeting? Like this, sometimes you never know if something's gonna like if people are gonna be a big fan of this or not. That's fine. Who cares?
I spilled.
We spilled. That's okay. It's hard. That can be tricky. But who cares? You never know if people are going to respond to it. People have liked this. I feel like truthfully people want to hold like an event, get Frank back and have like an official event where Frank,
Nick, it was weird because we did not plan that. We literally just, it came out of the blue. And I think after the pod was over, we're like, I think that reverse the curse is something we really need to look into. Like,
yeah,
in a weird
tongue in cheek kind of a
tongue
way,
in cheek, yeah,
but not at
in
the same
a weird
time.
Way. I feel like everybody would kind of understand, because if you've been through 20 years of this, of the last 20 years of Nebraska football, you know that it feels kind of extraordinarily how bad things have gone in big moments.
Yeah.
The big games and the big moments where it went right for 40 years. We've sort of just like, man, everything finds a way to go wrong. And we don't have a good explanation.
We're
going to blame it on the curse. Do you know what? The freaking Boston Red Sox, they got out of their curse by acknowledging it. They acknowledged it, and the curse did get reversed.
I sometimes like to think about it like 500 years from now, some archaeologists are like digging through and they find some Nebraska football, find hieroglyphics, and you're looking through stuff. They would look at this 40-year period. And then they would go, what happened in 2004?
2004.
It appears something changed. What happened that year?
There's a ghost.
Asteroid hit. Did asteroid hit? And dinosaur and Frank Solich.
We can only speculate. Frank Solich must have been a exploding volcano. I don't know what it was.
Frank Solich. What?
There was a global warming in 2004, and Nebraska football could not win again.
Oh, they find a mummified like Callahan underneath their own.
Looks like Han Solo and then.
but you would trace everything to that moment where it went wrong.
They go, what happened in 2000?
What happened in 2004? Asteroid, global warming. what happened, you know? And so I think we all need to acknowledge it. So yeah.
Asteroid.
It is Frank Solich. Is Frank Solich a volcano?
We studied their language. Frank Solich's must be volcano.
What happened to Nebraska?
Why do they talk like this? Because
it must have been a super.
Okay, talking about exploding volcano. Paul on Facebook says, Bo, do you have a favorite Frank Solich story? Could be being recruited by him the 2003 season. When did you talk to this exploding volcano?
When Frank became the exploding volcano.
When he was in the current form of coach before volcano. Oh, yeah, let me tell you
about this. I think if I had
sweating
to
put and crying. A... I think the wine officially hit us a little bit.
Yeah, that's good wine. That's so good, though. I mean, Nick, that's so good. In the future, when they dig up Nebraska football, so somebody digs out where they can dig out Memorial Stadium, and there's a scroll.
One scroll, and it's like...
What do they call it? Papyrus? They got papyrus scrolls.
And it's hieroglyphics. It's like different things, and they're like, what happened here?
What happened
Frank here? Solich. Who is this Solich?
Who is this Frank Solich?
Why did he... What
Why
happened?
Did he go away?
When he left, everything changed.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Favorite Frank story. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it. And how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella windows and doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com.
Lay it on me. Favorite Frank story? Probably my...
When you committed?
When I committed, yeah. I think I told it on the pod before, but like the one that always stands out to me was that, because, you know, I was coming out of my sophomore year, and I went to Husker football camp, which was a big deal at the time, and like it was like full padded, but like you test, you do it all, like you play, you practice, and I had a great camp. I really had it like the best I had played up to that point, probably my life was in a camp. I was I really had a great camp. But I was just, you know, 16. I wasn't thinking about anything besides like, wow, this is great. Now I'm going home. And
right.
And it was the last day of camp, and Frank walks up to me in stretching lines, and he pulls me up, and he says,
pulls you to this office.
No, he just pulls me out there right in the field. And he says, hey, I just want to let you know, like, you had a great camp, and we went off you a scholarship. And I was just like, you know, I was like shocked, but I just said, yeah, I'll take it. And apparently nobody does that.
No one takes it on the spot.
Nobody takes it. Everybody says, well, thank you.
I gotta go think about and talk.
I gotta go get with my video people and my Instagram people before I
can. I got some videos to make.
Yeah.
But you know, like he was even taken aback by. He's like, I'll take it. And he's like, do you want to go talk to your dad or discuss it? No. I go, no, I want it. And I was like, I can't believe I'm getting a scholarship.
I bet right now, there's no way if we could ever talk to Frank, you had to have been the easiest recruit of all time.
You didn't have to recruit me. I was the easiest recruit in history.
I bet a lot of teams. Now it was so early. A lot of teams probably didn't give have a chance to even like recruit you.
Yeah.
But think about like, I bet all these other schools went, okay, hold on. His dad.
I got letters. Like, people knew not to waste their time.
Cause that's big. People, that's big for coaches. They don't want to waste their time on a kid that you got no chance.
I see my brother having to recruit, and I see like how much work it is and how much like you pour into these relationships. And then they just like, and, you know, you go, man, like I'm actually very happy that I didn't make a coach like once every few months would call, and I'd be like, don't waste your time. Just go recruit somebody else. Right. I'm coming. But like, yeah, I mean, I was just
that's so, great though.
So it's so straight happy up to have a, a scholarship offer. I was right. Like, great. Yeah, I'm in.
Do you remember what you came home? Did you call your dad immediately? Like, do you remember? I remember talking to you. We were at the snack bar eating chicken strips and you told me.
I mean, were you like, are you kidding me?
I mean, I was.
We weren't even like, we barely played football the year before for Southeast.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it was weird, but
we just went to the ninth grade dance a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I think I called my dad and he was like, wow, really? Yeah,
that's exciting though. But that's the easiest, has to be the easiest recruiting story in the history
I was the earliest recruit ever.
Is that still?
I think Cam Jurgens might be the earliest.
Cam, gotcha.
I think he might have.
Wow. So he like during his sophomore year?
It would maybe have to be during his sophomore year because I was just after my sophomore year.
You'd have been in June of
June 2000.
2001?
2001, maybe. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Andy on Twitter says, after doing the Husker Classic recap pods, what one defining trait from the program in the past, in your opinion, would best translate to today and help turn all these close losses into wins, assuming the current team could adopt that one trait? To me, the first thing I wrote down was special teams.
I thought special teams too.
Okay, but I guess there are a lot of things you watch with these old games. And if you haven't gone back and listened to these Husker Classic recap pods, I hope when they're digging it out, they're like, what is Husker Classic
Nick recap? Bahi. Why he love punters so much?
What he love Darren Erstad? Wow.
But why he talk about kickers so often?
Why he loved him so much? He give player of game to punter.
But honestly, every one of my players of the game is like
what
punter.
What country are these people?
I don't know. But I'm always, there's a lot of things you watch with these old games and you go, man, they were good in the D-line. They were good in the O-line. The play calling situationally was really good, whatever. But I'm not so sure something that hasn't also jumped out of me that I maybe wasn't expecting it to is the special teams. How seemingly every game Nebraska wins the special teams field position battle and they loom large in a lot of these games. And to me, I know that's a convenient thing because right now special teams is struggling so much, but it's the honest to God's truth of like when I watch the best of the best of Husker history, their special teams, man, were on point.
That was absolutely the case. Is like we'd watch these Husker Classic games, you know, 93 Florida State, 94 Miami,
97 Missouri, 2001 Oklahoma,
94 Colorado,
94 Colorado, and like.
Every time we're blown away by the special teams.
Yes.
It's like, especially the punting. The punting is
incredible.
I mean, the field goal kicking's like
fine.
But the punt game is always immaculate. It's like pinning people inside, turning over the field. It's never a concern. And we usually had some good kickoff teams, good kickoff. Like we've always,
the returners had some Dwan Gross. Damon had some wiggle to him. Like
Dwan Gross.
I'm ready.
You watch Dwan Gross. Shoot. You just go. That can be your offense.
Oh, I love me some Dwan Gross.
So I would say,
but you with me, are you with me on that?
I'd say special teams first. And then I don't know. Can turnovers be a category? I don't know.
Probably. I mean, yeah, I think that's the main one because there's also this element of like anytime there was that big play, they made it. You know, that's a little harder to kind of quantify. At Mr. Bill on Twitter says, how frustrating is it when you work on something all week long and then when it comes to game time for some players, it just doesn't happen between the ears?
Is that probably talking about Cam Taylor Britt? Or is that talking about?
I'd have to imagine it kind of applies to a lot of different.
I think I'll take the you work on something all week. I'd say this: they worked on special teams. They worked their butts off on special teams all spring and all fall. I mean, they've really worked on it, and they laid a freaking egg with special teams. That has got to be like. That of all things might be the most demoralizing is they biff a couple kicks. They, you know, obviously the Cam Taylor Britt on the inch yard line. And it's like, those are the things you just go. It's so demoralizing. I think, especially in the moment when you think about all the work you put in. So
yeah.
Hopefully they can bounce back from that. But man, Nick, I know they worked hard.
Yeah.
Like no joke. They were working way harder than the average team because they're like, this is one thing we're going to do well. And they laid a freaking egg still.
Let me ask you a question, because some people have talked about this and it's real, but it also, I want to get where your mind was with stuff. Some people have talked about, like, so working on special teams, and then you go out, you lay an egg, and how the players need to gain confidence in this coaching staff, that like what they're teaching them can translate to success on the field. And while I agree, like that, just that premise, it's hard to disagree with. But I also, and maybe it's because I was, maybe this is just me, but if Coach Altman or Bill Self or Chuck Mazursky or Jeff Smith, whoever, preached something and then it didn't work in a game, I didn't turn around and go, this is your fault, Bill Self, Dana Altman. I blamed me. I blamed us. And maybe that's because I don't know. Does that make sense? Like, but I think we painted like these Cam Taylor Britts, like
they didn't teach. Like Cam Taylor Britt is feeling it on him. I think that's like the misconception is, like, I think people like want to paint that out as like that's a coaching error. Like the reality is, like, Cam Taylor Britt feels awful. He's a great player.
He wasn't coached to do that.
He made a mistake. And that's unfortunate. Connor Culp, all Big Ten kicker. He feels terrible. He missed two extra points. But like, that's on the players. Like, at some point, I think what you're saying is, like, the players are responsible for doing the things they know they should do.
Yeah.
Like, those are extra points and catching the ball inside the 10. That's high school stuff. That's grade school stuff.
I was thinking about this. I don't remember ever missing an extra point in high school. Do you ever remember us missing an extra? Now, we weren't I was the holder. It's not like we were, but I'm just saying, I don't remember.
Not that I remember.
I don't remember it, but that just goes to show you how elementary it is.
Nick, two in a game
is crazy.
It's, I mean, you look at statistics, it's a, like, you don't see that almost ever.
No. So, and maybe I'm sounding hypocritical here, because there are times where, you know, I can remember certain times, like we played Michigan State my freshman year, one of the first big games, and I was playing. I sat on the bench the whole game, but I was a freshman at Kansas. But like, I remember that was the first, like, we're installing the game plan. It's like, this is in Michigan State. There's Tom Izzo. Allen Fieldhouse is rocking. Coach Self, you know, we got this plan. We're going to chat the post. We're going to do this, whatever. And then it works and we win. And yeah, your belief in the staff increases when that's the case.
Yeah.
But so I think that can be true. And while someone would say, well, if that is true, the opposite can be true. And I guess what I struggle with is, I guess most athletes, if they're worth a darn, blame themselves before they're going to blame a coaching practice regimen. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't, I mean, to Mr. Bill's question about like how frustrating is it to, it's frustrating, but I think it's more frustrating internally than it is like anything else.
Nick, Cam Taylor Britt, like, that guy's a legitimate NFL prospect, and he's pissed off at himself because now he looks bad. I mean, he was, I think, a little rattled maybe the rest of the game. Like, he needs to, like, hopefully he gets over this and gets back to like playing confident. Like, I hope he's our punt returner, and I hope he,
I hope they don't just write him off.
He took first team reps this week, which tells you like,
right.
Which I think is the right move. Like, confidence, we want you to play, we want you, because we need a playmaker back there. But you know, like, guy like that, like, you don't want to lose confidence. You don't want to lose confidence that you're the freaking dude. Like, he went into, like, the reason why he probably went and got that ball, it's not because he was underconfident, it's because he was overconfident.
No question.
Like, he wants to be the guy, and I would rather a guy that wants to be the guy than a guy that's scared to make a play.
Totally. So agree,
that's where we want to balance to, like, hey, like, be smart, but the guys that can do it, we need to be out there doing it.
This next question, I'm going to kind of deviate. I want to take it somewhere because I think it's interesting. But Jeff,
Everybody, as apparently people want to talk to you today. He goes, Bo, what is your take on the seemingly undisciplined play of the Huskers over the past few years? Penalties, mental mistakes, lack of discipline, execution. Statistically, it doesn't seem to be improving. Please share what your Husker and NFL coaches and teammates did in practice to build the confidence and improve the execution that is the key to eliminating the present issues. Do you have any quick answer on that? Because I have something I want to...
I'll tell you, the New England Patriots, what they did, penalty... Belichick would yell, take a lap. You're out. You run around the field. I don't know that. I mean, you harp on execution, you harp on discipline, and you can pull guys out if they don't play. But I mean, in the end, it's like, I think it's a little bit harder. Like when you, I think it was maybe Dirk that said something like this. It's like when you aren't a dominant physical player, you're more apt to make mistakes and penalties. And I think we're still in that, like we're trying to get past that.
Yeah, where's the line of mental and physical leading to penalties or mistakes?
Yeah, like if you're a 6'7", 340-pound first-round draft pick tackle,
it's easy to not hold.
You don't have to hold much because you're just big. But like when you're not quite strong enough and they're stronger than you and faster than you, you hold more. So I think there's a line. We're getting bigger and faster and stronger and more talented, but I don't know that we're quite there yet skill-wise and strength-wise. And like so... I think it's some of it you practice and some of it is like, who's better?
Totally agree. And that's pretty much my answer. But I do think there's something to, you talk about Belichick doing the lap thing. I remember vividly, we lost to Iowa State on Big Monday at Kansas. And Coach Self said, tomorrow, 6 a.m., we're putting, remember, as you can have 4 hours a day. It was a 4-hour rule. He goes, we're going to put 4 hours on the clock. And we're not leaving until it's all zeros. And you're like, fuck. And then also we walk in there and we see there's two treadmills being wheeled in on the sideline. And anytime missed block out, turnover, missed assignment, didn't screen, whatever, it was you'd go over to the treadmill and they'd have it on like 10, 12 miles per hour. And you had to, you know, sprint for... They said a minute, but they did it till your ass almost fell off it. And so that'll make you shape up on a variety of levels. Because number one, you don't want to go to that treadmill and sprint. Number two, you don't want to wake up at 6 a.m. and practice for 4 hours.
I'll tell you what, man. I like that. Nick, I don't know. How do kids handle that today?
I don't know. And I don't know if do people do that nowadays.
I feel like you can't go there as much as you used to.
Because I remember talking to Jeremy Case. We know Jeremy. Jeremy's now in a full-time assistant at Kansas. Just got hired. Full-time assistant. He was their video coordinator. I played with Jeremy at KU. But I called a couple of Kansas games last year, and we were talking. Jeremy's like, man, coach has gone soft. They don't do what we used to do. And maybe there's just every year it gets a little harder to be like that.
Nick, when you can transfer at the drop of a dime and you don't have to sit out and – I just think it puts way more of the power in the players' hands, and the coaches have to walk a finer line. It's hard to coach hard now.
And so before we played, I feel like this is like people give me shit that all I do is tell stories about at Kansas, but it's like, I mean, I played for a Hall of Fame coach, and there's a lot of things that I'm going to land the plane here.
Roy and Bill Self. I mean,
Dana's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so, you know, but those years at Kansas were amazing.
Were transformative, you know. Like, but the other thing was Coach Self didn't like the way we were rebounding, and he thought we were soft. He always thought we were soft. That's his big thing. Like the number one thing people talk about, like he demands toughness. Like you and Bill Self like see the world very similar.
No,
yeah, you two need to get together and hang out
because soft people out
saw.
There.
Yeah, that's his whole thing.
A lot of people
soft.
Need to get hard.
So soft.
I love it.
But we were going to play Georgia Tech, Jarrett Jack, and those guys on New Year's Day, and they were a pretty physical team. And he kicked us out of practice, and said, come back tonight at like 7. We're going to practice like men. We come back into to the practice facility and we have shoulder pads and helmets on the baseline. Says, put a shoulder pads on, a helmet on. We did rebound 4-on-4, basically just like crack skulls.
I was amazed. You've told me this before, but I was amazed at that story because I've never heard of basketball players putting on pads and like smashing heads,
smashing each other for an hour and a half. I'm talking just, we put the little like plug like in the rim. So the ball couldn't go and Coach Silva just shoot it. It would come off at 4-on-4. You smashing dudes.
I just like, Nick, I'm trying to imagine 2021 college basketball players.
These trying to do that
toothpick dudes.
Right.
Doing that drill right now.
Right.
And like actually going all out.
When people are hitting each other.
I feel like I can't even.
I know. I don't know. But I bring that up as another like, okay, when you get in the game, when that shot goes up, better find a body and box out.
There are things that stick in your mind, right? Those, what that did didn't actually teach your body anything. It taught your mind something. It taught your mind that like, it just hardened something in there. We're like, it set a tone where we understand. We get what you're trying to say.
Not only do you get it, but you also go, I don't want to do that again.
Yes.
So I guess what I'm getting at is how I can only speak to my coaches, Coach Altman, Coach Self, the way they tried to deter and eliminate and instill an environment where you didn't make mistakes was a little bit of fear. A little bit of like, we don't want to do hard as shit drills for 4 hours. No. We don't want to do it. So there's a little bit of that. But here's the thing that's so interesting to me. When we think about Nebraska football's program now, how there's Jeff's question, what there's a lot of undisciplined, blah, 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 blah. The thing that's so interesting to me is how you go, okay, well, what's happening in practice for players to be held accountable. But then you think about Xavier Betts and Sevion Morrison not getting on the field, not playing because they didn't practice correct. So you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So there is a perfect example like how they're trying to instill and coach discipline and the right way of doing things. But yet it still is permeating in the games. You see what I'm getting at? How there's this weird.
It's weird. People are criticizing them for not playing guys.
Isn't that funny?
And then they're like, why aren't we more disciplined? We're like, well, we're not playing the more talented guys because we're trying to like preach discipline. But then
that's what's funny. People want to have it both ways. They want to talk about you got to have guys that do it the right way, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you put the guys on the field that who cares if they're not doing it the right way? It's like, well, it's kind of how it goes. So I know it's very layered and nuanced, but there's a lot in that to kind of digest and assess.
I think that was a long answer that we gave.
I know that was a super long one. Sorry. I had Nick Boss story time there. There's a couple of questions. Dutch, that can't be his name. Shouts out to your old dog Dutch, but, I had a couple people asking about, adjustments. What makes for good halftime adjustments? Says, I hear all the time people say Scott, a really Nebraska coach since Osborne, doesn't adjust. What happens at halftime at either basketball or football with this? And I first will say, I think this isn't meant to, this is going to come off like really arrogant, but I feel like there are two crutches for people that don't know how to talk about the game. They complain about the reffing and they just throw out adjustments. Like when people want to engage in a conversation about sports, but they really don't know what they're talking about, they go to talking about, you believe how bad the officiating was, that ref.
Yeah.
What were they doing today? It's like, okay, like, all right. Or it's adjustments. No, they never make any adjustments. It's like, give me one example of one adjustment you would like to
it's
see.
It's just so hard when you're not in like the locker room behind the scenes, when you haven't put in all the hours of like coming with the game plan and like, of course they make adjustments. Like they do, like they have a game plan. They have adjustments. Now, do some people adjust better than others? Sure.
Absolutely.
Do some people adjust faster than others? Sure. But like to say we don't adjust, like, of course we do. Like,
right.
We do. But I think it's just, it's hard when you're not in there. I mean, even me, like you say, like, if you wanted to ask me, like, what are our adjustments? Like, well, I don't know. Like, you're not in there and go like, well, we're shifting our nose tackle out a whole nother gap and doing this, you know, like, who knows? Like, I don't know. It's like, unless you're in there, it's too hard to see. It's usually not that obvious, right?
Right.
Not like, well, hey, we came out in shotgun, then we went to power eye all second half. Like, it's like, nobody does that.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, if there's something that's happening that is clear, like whether the jet sweep in the 2012 Big Ten championship game, like trying to figure out a way, but sometimes there is no adjustment. You just got to get it done. There's a fine line between, there are times the solution lies in X's and O's. Like there's times at halftime, you need to come to your players with a solution. Like, guys, we are now going to line up like this. We're now passing this guy off, or we're going to, in basketball, we are not going to trap the ball screens out here. Like, sometimes the solution is that. Sometimes the solution is you got to get it. You got to get off that block, or you got to set the edge, or you got to hedge that screen and get back.
It's usually not much. It's usually like, we're going to switch like how we cover something. Like, instead of doing quarters here, we're going to cloud, like where the corner's pressing and the safety's deep. Like,
right.
Those are like little adjustments that you wouldn't even be able to see until, like, unless you were talking to like the coaches. But the all-time best halftime adjustment I've ever seen that I will stand by was Bo Pelini's first game at Nebraska.
Really?
Yes. This one is so vivid in my mind.
As a head coach or a DC?
DC. And this is where Bo Pelini won the hearts and minds of all the Nebraska players. That offseason and that first season of his, he was so good. He was so good in every way you could imagine. But that first game, playing Oklahoma State, they're a good team. It was an important game, right?
Yeah.
It was like Frank was like, whoa.
Was that Barrett's scoop and score game?
Barrett had a scoop and score. Yeah. Defense played unbelievable.
Yeah.
But Pelini, he gets it at halftime. He goes, the first thing he says is like, guys, they ran a play that was like, they're going to come back to it. He goes, they didn't complete it, but it was open. They're going to come back to it. He goes, in the first series, they're going to come back to it. If they line up like this, they're going to run the back out across the field. They're coming back to it. And I swear to God, in the first series they got the ball, they ran the exact play we were waiting on, and we killed it. And everybody was like, this guy gets it. Like, it was a halftime adjustment where he said, they're not only, this is what we're going to do, this is what they're going to do. And I'd never seen anybody call the shot of the play. That's
cool. Yeah.
And so that was something that always stuck with me, is like, it's not just like the plays that do work against you. It's the plays that could have worked against you that didn't, that the offensive coordinator goes, I'm coming back to that. And I'm coming back after him.
Wow.
And that was like a next level for me, where I went, oh, okay.
Right.
Cause it was a lot. I was a freshman going, like, trying to take it in, but Bo Pelini took himself like to another tier, because he did that. He went to the next level.
There can't be moments like that. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, again, I feel like we talked about getting confidence in the staff. Like, there are moments like that. Like, and maybe Scott needs to have a moment like that with this team where people go, oh boy.
I think Scott needs to win a big game. Because at Central Florida, he was 13-0, but the Auburn game, I think the Auburn game where he won.
Yeah, people
he beat a team that they go, Central Florida shouldn't beat Auburn.
Right.
Central Florida beat Auburn.
Right.
And I think that's what Scott needs. He needs to beat a team.
It's crazy you say that, because that's, I'll paraphrase, Graham emailed and basically asked that. I'll just give the Cliff Notes his version, because he says, hey, Nick, big fan of the pod, all you've done.
He goes, I think my first experience with you was when I was probably about 12 years old at Creighton basketball camp, and he had us doing defensive slide drills. It's all been up from there. But he brings up, he goes, as an unapologetic Jaysker fan, I can't help but compare my two favorite teams, Creighton basketball and Nebraska football. Now, I don't know how close you follow this. He goes, he said, if you remember back to Marcus Zagorowski's freshman year, so this would have been 3 years ago, the good, their star point guard, well, I think it's the best point guard to ever play at Creighton. Because we had a lot of games against good teams where we play well, but be right in the game, but a couple of late game mistakes cost them a few times. And then he talked about how Creighton was able to beat number two ranked Villanova towards the end of the season. And it feels like Creighton taught themselves how to win in that game and build this, we can beat anyone mentality. So getting back to Nebraska, do you think getting the program turned around is as simple as winning one huge game?
It would do wonders. If they could ever win against
Oklahoma,
an Ohio State, even Wisconsin.
You go to Wisconsin and win this year?
Yeah. I mean, they've almost beaten Wisconsin a couple times. But if you can beat Wisconsin and even Michigan, even though Michigan's down, just beating Michigan would help. You beat one of the three or four best in the conference or like an Oklahoma. I really think it would change things.
I agree.
But we haven't had the blueprint yet. I know.
But I do think there's something to that. Like, again, we've talked about before, they're trying to become a winning program. They're trying to learn how to win. The only way to do that is probably to win.
Got to win.
At some point, you got to win some of these games.
You got to win and you got to get some momentum. We can't get momentum. It's been
tough. We circled this one because we wanted to kind of talk about it a little bit. Tom says, why stick with Adrian Martinez? Time to start fresh. Can't get any worse.
It can get worse. It could get way worse. If you don't play Adrian Martinez, it will get way, 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 way worse. Stick with Adrian Martinez.
That's
an easy answer.
Yeah. Like that's where, because there are some people that watch Nebraska and go, you got it. You can't, they're not going anywhere with Adrian Martinez. You got to sit him down. And to me, I go, yeah, he may have his shortcomings. He's he does have his shortcomings. But when you look at the context of the situation, all you got to do is think about what Brett Bielema said.
We're worried about two.
He said, we felt like there was one guy that could beat us. Number two. That's Martina. And so to me, this is what's so hard. It's like two things can be true at once. Like I see all the shortcomings. The turnovers, the backbreaking turnovers, missing open guy. I see all those things. But I also see an offense where if Martinez doesn't make some, if Martinez is not on the field, I don't know how they move the ball.
If he's just handing it off, or they're running just basic plays, I mean, I just don't know who else we're going to. Like, I mean, he really is. This offense is based around like that guy being dynamic and making it happen. And sometimes he doesn't make the plays and we lose. But like, I don't know what we do without him. I really don't.
Yeah.
Like,
so I'm with you.
Worse option with him out.
Like, I totally agree.
That's an easy answer for me. Like, nothing against the backup quarterbacks. I think the kid from Kearney, hey, get your hands off my Heine.
Yeah.
He's got an NFL arm, but he is 2 years away from like, we don't want him to play until he has like gotten used to the D1 level.
No question.
But that guy's got talent, but we don't want him now. We want him in 2 years.
Yes. So we're in lockstep on that. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. Everybody that knows my athletic background, you know, as a quarterback in high school, but you know, I believe in establishing the run game. And even more than that, I believe in establishing the Runza game. That's an original Runza cheeseburger, some onion rings, double dipped in a homemade batter, little bit of a pop to top it off. You know, in football, you establish a run, but at lunch, you establish the Runza. It's just that simple. So get out to Runza today and establish the Runza game, or check out the delicious salads. You got the chicken bacon ranch salad, sweet berry chicken salad, and my personal favorite, the Southwest chicken salad. You got to get out to Runza, establish a Runza game, or get a salad. Either way, you are going to leave satisfied. Runza makes it all better.
What next one do we want to go with here?
Man, we got some. Are we ready to go to like kind of crazy ones?
Weird. Let's get.
You want to get crazy with it? RMAC. This is on Facebook or Twitter? This is on Twitter.
I kind of cheated on this one a little bit. It says best 90s music videos.
Ooh, ooh.
Now, the first ones, there are a couple that came to my mind right away, but then I Googled 90s music videos.
You cheated.
I did.
Okay, this is good, though. I need
And there were a couple of them that I was like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. For me, the first music video I thought of that really it's not going to make any top 100, top 50 all time music video. But for me, because it was like one of the first songs that I was just obsessed with, I've always loved the Mo Money, Mo Problems music video.
I'll give you that one because it was like the camera was like a,
remember,
like
it
a
came
bubble.
Out,
it was like a bubble camera.
That and it came out where it was Puffy yeah. Woods. He was, you know, made a putt and they go nuts. It was flashy. I've always loved that music video, but it was more about the song.
That's a song that encapsulates the 90s in a good way. Like, I remember that a lot.
I just remember feeling, the reason I thought of that one is that was one of the video, I love that song so much that I would go out of my way to watch MTV and BET to, because I wanted to hear that song so bad that I watched that video a million times. There's not a music video I've watched more in my life than that music video because I like that song so much.
Okay, but now I'm trying to think of just like, okay, the classics, like the most.
Yeah, we're talking 90s. So we're not talking 90s. Thriller.
No, Thriller's eight. I'm talking, so 90s, you start going through early 90s. You got Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
That was number one on the list.
Okay, so that's like, you know, they're like the grungy cheerleaders. And like that one, that was one of the first that came to my mind because it is iconic.
It is.
It set the tone for the sort of like the grunge era.
Well, for the first prerequisite for any of these is when I say the name of the song, can you immediately think of the video?
Okay. Now,
like if that's the case, then that should be that just gets you in the conversation.
Yeah. Well, so now we're talking about Gin and Juice, like Dr. Dre,
Nothing But a G Thing.
Nothing But a G. Like those ones are that West
Dre
Coast
Day,
thing.
Yeah. California
that,
Love.
That's a visual, like that thing took over the country. So that's an important one as well. I'm picturing some Britney Spears.
She
was big, and that was
Hit Me Baby One More Time was a pretty big music video.
She was showing belly.
That was belly was big in the 90s.
If you
the belly decade.
Let's talk about some belly.
Because Christina Aguilera, Genie in a Bottle, a lot of belly going on.
Let's give the OG to belly. Do you know who the OG to belly is?
J-Lo?
No, it ain't J-Lo. Who's the OG to belly?
I mean, I'm trying to think of Madonna, Janet Jackson.
Well, they probably showed belly, but do you know who it really was? Shania Twain.
Oh, yeah.
Shania's
got it going on, dog.
Shania was the good country girl.
Yeah, but she bellied it up.
Shania showed midriff, and all the like farmers' grandmothers were like, she ain't nothing but a...
Yeah,
she ain't nothing but a hussy, and I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care to see her songs.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
but Shania, you know, who's as sweet as pie, but she like, you know,
she
showed some midriff, and that was like scandalous.
Was that the You Don't Impress Me Much video?
No, that was like years.
You're still before. The one. Do I know too many Shania? Have I already eclipsed my?
No.
Do you mean that she's the one video?
This is like early to mid 90s. Shania started showing belly, and that was a big deal.
I got a great belly one for you.
Give me one.
Cause I do this one. It was on the list that I Googled, but I was like, oh yeah. Cause I kind of sneaky like this song too. Alicia Silverstone in the Aerosmith crazy video.
That's good. Nick Bach. Give me some of that shit. Doc.
That first of all, that song's good. I kind of, on the low, your boy kind of digs some 90s Aerosmith.
Oh,
neat. And Dream On.
Yeah, Dream On's
good. Dream On's fantastic. But
good call, though. That's a forgotten gem is those. I think Alicia Silverstone might have done like two Aerosmith videos. And she
crazy
like,
and crying, maybe.
Yeah.
But that, because she does the bungee jump thing and she's got like great music. I mean, great. I urge everybody to Google that video. It's a great video. That one. But then there are two other ones that came to me that I don't know if one you'll know. One I don't know if you'll remember. But the other one was for some reason, the Guns N' Roses November Rain.
That's iconic.
A pretty iconic music
video. That's iconic. That was a big time one.
Do you remember Jamiroquai Virtual Insanity?
There you go. That's a great one because that is
the treadmill.
It's visual. It was like, it was innovative. Good song.
It's the perfect music video for the song too.
It was late 90s. That was the look of the late 90s.
And right? It's Virtual Insanity and things are like.
I think late 90s, early 2000s might have been the worst fashion period.
It's so bad. It's really bad.
Terrible.
Right. It is really, it's really
terrible.
Bad.
Even like grunge, I like think is better than late 90s.
I agree.
It's like,
but there was, his outfits were very 90s. Well,
even think about the Backstreet Boy. That stuff looks terrible.
Right.
Those guys were, they had the hair. That's terrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
I always hated that.
That was pretty bad.
Even the moment I was like, I know I don't want this.
Well, you know what I was trying to think of though? What was the ultimate, because we were teenagers for the late 90s. What was the ultimate video of like, you're seeing some, it was very provocative and you're like, whoa.
All right, let's think. I mean, I think when you.
Because we've already talked about the belly, but I'm trying to think of the very first.
When J-Lo did her first video, she was shaking things and we were like, excuse me. excuse me. Hold on. I have to stay in this room.
You're going to call a timeout in life. When was Shakira's first video?
2000s.
So that's probably too late.
We're talking 90s here.
Yeah.
I think Christina, Britney. So Madonna in the early 90s was doing some things.
She was doing some things. Like, what's going on? What's happening here?
She was doing like, she had leather on and we were like, eight. We're like, what is that? Why is she in leather? We don't know. We don't know why that's going on here, but
why would she do that?
Why would she do something like that?
Why would you do that?
Why has she got one of them horse whips in her hand?
On earth would you do that?
I don't understand it. Well, somebody explain that to me because I don't understand that. She's got some of them horse whips, but okay.
Oh, I do remember. I think it might have been Spinderella on What a Man spit her whole verse on like a rug. Like it was like a bearskin rug and she was like in lingerie. And I was like, what is happening here?
Yeah. TLC.
TLC, Salt and Peppa. Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson on the beach. I remember that one.
Oh man, got to cover.
Fighters. On the plane. They were like they did the goofy stuff.
Then the Blink 182 where they're running like naked.
They ran near you.
Beastie Boys Sabotage was a very iconic
good
video.
One. Beastie Boys. That was a good one.
There's a lot of them, man. There's all of Mariah Carey's videos were always pretty intense. In a good way, they were always fantastic, but
Mariah, I think we're forgetting somebody big.
We're forgetting a big, there's some female artists that we're forgetting about. I think
we're forgetting some big ones. I know we are,
but I think we got it covered. Don't you?
No,
no.
I think we missed
it. Ready to move off this one.
We missed it, but this is good. Cause then the people listening they'll hit us back. Like that's the good thing is when people remind, like that's the great thing about the messaging. People can hit you and be like, Nick, you forgot this.
You need to watch. But you need to watch when you go home tonight, watch Aerosmith Crazy video. It's a good video. It's a great video. Dog.
You know, it was crazy is like, so our neighbors, I think their daughter's like, I don't know, seventh grade.
Okay.
And they were all watching, they had an overnight. And so you could hear the girls going,
okay. Yeah.
They're watching Clueless on a projector against the house.
Oh,
a big projector watching Clueless.
Did you want to go?
Girls that are, between
they're getting back
sixth
into
grade
it.
And high school, I think we'll always like Clueless and Alicia Silverstone forever. I think it's the most girly girl movie there is.
Because I mean, she was a big, because that was right during that time. Alicia Silverstone was a huge star.
All the girls wanted to be her. They were all doing the Clueless stuff. They were doing the whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
As if
I forgot about that one.
That was what they did.
That didn't.
So girls are big. Girls. Well, Clueless is one of those movies that has survived for girls.
Right.
For high school and teenage girls.
Oh, man. But the crazy video.
Did you have to shut the door?
I don't know how I feel right now.
I don't know. What is going on?
What's going on? What's happening here?
I needed to take a moment and think about my life. Okay. I kind of feel like because I know your personality, you're going to include yourself in this one. Louie had such a good email that I emailed him back. Great question. Said, if all the players in Nebraska football history participated in a WWE, side note, I don't want to call it WWF. It's WWF for me.
Still.
A WWF style battle royale. Who would win? Then he also put, who would be the final 10 fighters?
Oh.
I think it's hard to find. 10's just a big number.
I'll give you a couple.
I know who I think would win.
All right, I'll start with you. You tell me.
Well, I think the first, I guess, I maybe need to think about it more. The first name that came to my mind was Corey Schlesinger.
Ooh, the battering.
I just thought, like, I think the two most manly positions to me in football meet on an ISO. I think a fullback and a middle linebacker are just ooze, alpha, male, lion.
I'm thinking of two older guys.
Oh, you got Dutton?
John Dutton is in the top two. Let me just tell you that right now.
You have told me, you remember the sketch, Bill Brasky sketch?
John Dutton should be
You told me stories about John Dutton that just can't be true, but they must be true.
Nick, he picked up a, not just a grizzly bear was trying to get into their cabin. And John Dutton went out there with a, and maybe it wasn't a grizzly bear, maybe it was a black bear.
It was like a cub.
Who knows? But he picked up a rock.
Lab.
He picked up a big rock. I'm telling you. And he threw it at the bear and drilled him and sent the bear running. Like, John Dutton is no joke.
So you got Dutton's surviving.
I have the first two that came to my mind.
Who was the second one?
Bob Brown.
Oh.
So Bob Brown's a Hall of Famer in college football, Hall of Famer in pro football. I think he was 1964 or 68. I'm blanking. Maybe 68.
Nebraska. Sir, I love you. You are just a
Bob
historian.
Brown. So Bob Brown came and spoke to us once. And I kid you not.
6'4", 280.
6'4", 280 in the 60s, Nick. And he was mean. When I say he was mean on a level that people even in the 80s and 90s don't understand. He was just mean. And that made for good football players in the 60s.
He was the first round. It was the second pick in the draft in 1964.
He's a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Like, yeah.
He is the real deal.
Okay, so he was an offensive tackle.
He was a tackle, and Nick, he's the meanest guy. Like, he's probably a nice guy, like, not, but on the field, I think he could probably be considered the meanest guy we've ever had.
Wow, good poll. This is why
he told a story. He came and spoke to the team, and he was talking about, like, you know, he went out there to line up and the defensive end was, this was in the pros, and they were like, hey, Bob, how's the family? And he said, F your mother. You know, like,
yeah,
he's one of those guys.
Right.
Like, he literally, and we all were sitting in our seats just like, oh my God, Bob. Like, we joked about Bob Brown the rest of the year because we're like, nobody's meaner than Bob Brown. Like, you don't want to mess with that guy. So Bob Brown.
But that is 6'4", 280 with no, people didn't lift weights. There was no protein shakes. There was no, like,
just meanness. He was just meaner than you. Just
enormous.
And in that ring, Nick, you want the meanest guy.
Right.
I'll take Bob Brown.
Okay, so John Dutton and Bob Brown
are finishing it.
Okay, the other, I mean, I wrote down Schlesinger. I mean, I feel like you can include all fullbacks. Maybe I have like a fullback. Maybe secretly I have like a fullback. I
think fullbacks are short, though. I think those big dudes you just.
Fullbacks, but I don't know, a little short.
Schlesinger. Battering ram him.
Remember you pointed out he KO'd homeboy on the opening kickoff in the 94.
Schlesinger's tough. I wouldn't Sue. Bet against him. Sue.
What about Jason Sue. And Christian Peter?
The Peter brothers. You got would the be good
psycho, like, just they want to like Hannibal Lecter you.
Those guys would be good in there. Wittstrom would be good in there.
Okay. Do you take yourself? You're a guy that's so confident in like.
But I'd be way more strategic than the rest of them.
They'd be make battling. Friends. You try to make friends with Bob Brown.
I'd be kind of just hiding out till the end. Then I'd go in and make my hay.
Do you survive longer than Barrett Root?
Yes.
Oh, between Barrett Root.
Oh, yeah.
Bo Root, Barrett Root, Tom Root, John Root.
I survive.
You are the
no
last.
No doubt.
You're the last
of the Roods.
Of the
I make
seed
it.
Yeah. To carry out. Wow. I make it.
Yeah.
John Rood on line two. I don't know.
Hey, John Rood would be good. Too.
John Rood would be pretty. He would 78 Oklahoma some people. That'd be John's. John would play on the back, get off the ropes, and then
but
78
you're
Oklahoma.
Susceptible people. To being the ropes pulled down. You know, over.
That's John Rood's whole philosophy. It's just a 78 Oklahoma, everybody.
It's not a bad move.
Well, I think because I had to Google him. I mean, Bob Brown might be my pick because you've talked me into him.
Nick, he's mean.
That's pretty good.
He's mean in a good way.
I like that. Okay, a couple other ones here. If your life was made into a movie, which actor would play you? Paul Newman?
Paul Newman or Kevin Costner?
Costner could do you pretty good.
Those would be mine too.
I wrote down Hillary Swank for obvious reasons. Just because if she cut her hair like mine
people look it up side by side it. I'm telling you people side by side.
It's pretty uncanny. Oh, man. I really want to meet her just to see if she would like, I would have to think she would look at me and go like, what?
Isn't she from Nebraska?
She was born July. I just looked it up. Cause there's always like, I need to get. By the way, I did that whole like 23andMe thing back like it was a faulty like my spit wasn't right or I don't know. They were like they sent me another kit and I just haven't gotten around
There's
to it.
No one else like you.
Yeah, they're like this guy's from another planet. But she was born July 30th, 1974 in Lincoln, Nebraska. And we are identical.
Nick.
I don't know what's happening, but me and Hillary Swank somehow.
Nick, I'm just saying
I'm going to end up in her like I don't know, in her family reunion in some way, shape, or form. But Hillary Swank for obvious reasons. I wrote down Jim Carrey because I feel like he could get my mannerisms.
Everybody that I've ever met. So, like, it's not people that you know well. It's people that I kind of know outside of your orbit. Yeah. And they meet you and they say, Jim Carrey. They say Will Smith. They say Keenan Michael Key. Those are the three I always hear for you.
So the Will Smith thing is like, wow, that's giving me way too much credit. Like Will Smith, especially
Will Smith in the 90s, though.
Yeah,
I think.
But like Will was cool. Like in the Fresh Prince, he was, like, was cool.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you're cool.
See, I think most guys at Kansas would think I was more Carlton than I was like.
Yeah, I mean, you're not Carl, but like
I'm not Will.
Here's the at Kansas. You were willing to
be goofy.
Guys were a little uptight, so you'd be goofy.
I'd never really heard until I called a game this past year at Xavier and Lane Grindle. Lane told me, he goes, just so you know, you are Keegan Michael Key. And I was like, and it took me like hearing that to be like, oh, I can't.
My wife said it when she saw him. She goes, kind of like Nick. And I go, yes.
Maybe if we hung out, I feel like the world would explode.
You know, he kind of has a laugh too. Like
he's got a loud laugh. Like, and he just,
like you kind of start laughing.
I think he's a great guy.
You like him, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
And then the last guy I wrote down for indulgent purposes because I can't believe Billy Bean can die a happy man. Because do you understand how good it would feel? That it
shows Brad Pitt.
I mean, like, imagine your life and the person that is cast to play you in the movie about your life is Brad Pitt.
What was it? I think I was listening to some podcast. And they were talking about the making of
Moneyball.
And Billy Bean was saying how he's like, yeah, Brad wants to come over and meet you. And he said, like, his wife, his daughter, and the nanny, like, all ran. They started putting on makeup. There's an effect there.
It's
like, you forget, like, when it happens, like, it gets weird. Yeah, like, girls lose their freaking minds.
No doubt about it. So I wrote down Brad Pitt for indulgent purposes, but I'll give you
Brad Pitt.
But, I mean,
Nick,
just because.
Who else would play you?
Come on, it's got to be Brad or Hillary Swank, one of the two.
Who else would play you, man?
If you could bring back any TV show, which TV show would you choose?
bring back? Okay, so I'm thinking of.
So it's hard as it, I think The Simpsons is still going, but we both feel from 93 to 2000 or 99.
With the same writers.
With the same writers, that would probably be my choice. But it's hard because that is still a currently ongoing show. So I want to eliminate that.
Think about Seinfeld. Think about, I mean, Friends. Didn't they just do a Friends reunion on, but I don't
HBO
have,
Max. I don't have that either, I want to watch it.
I mean, between Seinfeld, Friends, I'd do Seinfeld, but probably before Friends.
I would definitely do Seinfeld before Friends.
And then
I wrote down The Office. I still feel like those characters were so well defined, and Steve Carell is so good that Steve, you could just continue. Yeah. They could just literally still all be at Dunder Mifflin. Doing and Michael Scott could still just be doing absurd things, and the show. I really feel like if you got all the writers back, it would work right away.
Well, here's the thing: is you got Krasinski, who is Jim. You got
Rainn Wilson, who's Dwight Schrute.
Wilson's Dwight Schrute. You got the Nard Dog, who was help me with the name. Andy Bernard is.
I mean,
this is what kills me is when I can't remember ridiculous. This. You got Pam, you got
Ed Helms.
Okay. But like between Helms, Krasinski, Wilson, and Michael Scott,
Steve Carell.
Yeah. Between those four guys, they all went on to like become like movie
mega stars.
So you had 4 to 5 mega stars minimum. And then everybody else is like became like semi stars. Like it's just like if you brought them back, it would be huge, man. It'd be freaking huge.
I was listening to, so Krasinski was on Conan O'Brien's podcast, and Krasinski said like if everybody came back, he was like, I would do anything to get back to that. So basically, like, I got the sense because there's some like I don't know if Carell would. I think Carell feels like sometimes you can't go try to recreate it. And
it's hard when you've done it, like when you've done it.
And there's already an expectation level for it. Like, but I feel like those characters were so well defined and they were so iconic that it would work. So mine would honestly be it's either Seinfeld or Office or. I would choose Seinfeld choose The Office. Excuse me.
I think I would. I agree with you. I take Office over Seinfeld because I think Seinfeld would be hard to redo because it's a different kind of show. It's a multi-cam show where The Office is like the the documentary style. I think it plays to humor.
But it would
more.
Be funny though to see how now a lot of this stuff already happens in Curb Your Enthusiasm because Larry David writes for it now,
but it would be a fake Seinfeld reunion on Curb.
But it would be funny to see Elaine, George, Kramer and Jerry and their idiosyncrasies and issues with society and the little things that happen in today. Because you know what I mean?
This is the hard part about today. Like to have a funny show today, it's like, it's such a different world.
Yeah.
It's like you got to have an approach that's just so like you just can't like it's such a different era of comedy because of like the political climate and everything. Yeah. Like it's touchy.
Totally.
And so you either have to kind of go all over the top on it or you're kind of like, I think it's hard to be funny.
I think it'd be tough. I think it'd be tough. That's why I chose The Office. I mean, even The Office, some of the early Office episodes were kind of went there with certain things. You're like, ooh, I don't know in 2021 how that would kind of fly.
Well, but remember like Diversity Day?
Yeah. I mean,
Diversity Day was like, whoa.
Right.
Like,
but in some ways it was kind of like in some ways, Steve Carell was understood. He was like what not to do.
That's why it's so good.
That's why it worked.
I think it still works now because it's so good.
Because it's so good. But Seinfeld, it would be interesting to see how they would operate in this world. You know, the George complaining about like, so I DM this girl on Twitter. She comes back to me with an emoji. Well, what kind of emoji was it, George? It was, you know, like that would Kramer, be like,
I'm stressed. I'm really
stressed. So, like, it'd be funny to see what that kind of writing would be, but I'd still go in The Office.
I think and don't sleep on Parks and Rec, dude. Parks and Rec's had a cast too.
That's true.
You know, Chris Pratt became he's a big time movie star. And then you got.
That's true.
Amy Poehler, Aziz Ansari. You got,
What's crazy is these
Ron Swanson.
These shows haven't gone off the, like The Office and Parks and Rec didn't come off the air that long ago, relatively speaking.
2013, 2014-ish.
That's not that long ago.
No.
So it's not like we're like it resurrecting feels like a long Mork time. And Mindy or something like
that. You know what the difference is? Like it feel like so much has happened with like technology and just the platforms that it feels like 20 years ago because it was on cable TV. And now cable TV almost doesn't feel like it exists.
Why don't shows? It seems like when I was growing up, all the successful shows, for the most part, were just about a family. Full House, Family Matters, Brady Bunch, Step by Step,
Roseanne,
like it all, like Who's the Boss? You like what?
There are a couple of those.
Maybe it's just those have done so. You've done so much of them that you can't do it anymore. But it's like that formula maybe has just been like beaten to death.
It has been. It's been done. I don't think I think there's always a place for it. Like, I think there's always a place for sort of like easy to watch.
Fresh Prince was another one that was basically a family.
Yeah. I mean, they're easy to watch sort of like feel good shows. I think there should always be a place for it.
I think so.
I don't know about you, but like there's times in the last, 18 months where like you didn't want to watch heavy stuff. You didn't want to watch deep. Like, you wanted to watch the lightest, like, easy going show in the world. Just because you're just like, I want to be
just nice. Just let me escape for a little bit here.
So I think there's a place, but Nick, I think you're right. It's not an obvious. There's a couple, I think, shows like truly on cable that still do that, but like so people on streaming and on it's a different type
of program. That was the formula.
Always. You always had three networks.
Wonder Years. All that, like it was like
they are bringing out they're bringing back a new Wonder Years.
Are they really? Yeah. With the narrator?
Well, Daniel Stern was the narrator. Did you know that?
Is he still? Yeah, he's still alive. I would assume he wasn't too old. Okay, but yeah. The narrator, like honestly, in some ways, the narrator made that show.
Oh, he was great.
It was incredible. All right, we're like 90 minutes in. We got to wrap this up here in a little bit. But I really wanted to ask you this question. This might be the last one, depending on how this goes. Yeah. You can pick three companions during a zombie apocalypse. So a zombie apocalypse, World War Z type thing breaks out. Okay.
Wow.
What would be the professions of the three companions?
Okay. There's a zombie apocalypse.
Because the first thing I thought about was a doctor, but is a doctor really going to help you in a zombie apocalypse? Probably not, but a doctor is never a bad thing, a bad dude to have around you.
I'm going to take Schwarzenegger from Commando just because he'll mow him down with machine guns.
Okay. Oh, so you went like specific. First thing I wrote down, then a Navy SEAL.
Okay, so we can't do like fake guys.
Yeah, we're not doing like, give me Jack Bauer. I'll take Jack Bauer.
I thought we were going fake guys. Okay.
It might be better to go fake guys, but I wrote down Navy SEAL.
I think if you take three Navy SEALs, aren't you doing your job? Like,
but is it? I mean, probably. I guess,
or maybe somebody that can.
I wrote down a pilot. Never know if you get to a plane, you got to get out of there. So I wrote down Navy SEAL.
So you pilot. You thought about this?
Though. I thought about this for like 15 minutes.
Okay, because I'm struggling right now. Okay.
Navy, you went Schwarzenegger. Not where my mind.
I went.
I
went to Commando.
You went a guy with a machine gun. I went guns. Navy SEAL, pilot. And then I wrote doctor/comedian. Do you need
a laugh?
As though, because let's be honest, at some point it's probably going to be over. Like, do you kind of need Kevin Hart with you? Like, no. I was like, do you want Kevin Hart making jokes? Do you want Dave Chappelle with you? Do you want Jerry Seinfeld?
So you're saying you're going to die? So you just want
to... I mean, the reality is, like, at some point, it's probably all going to come to an end.
See, I'm probably...
Or do you need to find... You know, on World War Z, Brad Pitt, you needed someone that was like a vaccine. They needed to figure out, like, a scientist. Like, do you need a scientist?
You need the scientist.
So Navy SEAL, do you like my pilot thing in case you need to... I mean, because at some point, you got to get in the air.
It's pretty specific. I mean, you got three choices.
So pilots, maybe two. Like, one-dimensional.
I'd like an astronaut in case I'd like a rocket
chef.
Ship.
I want a chef.
I'd like a breakfast chef because I really like breakfast. You can't kick anything but omelets and waffles. And
I'd like the technician for a nuclear submarine. Like,
one thing.
Do we want that?
So maybe pilots too. I mean, I was envisioning us just flying away.
You
got
to come
places.
Down somewhere. So
yeah,
there's a finite amount of gas.
Man. So apparently, I'm having a Navy
get a
SEAL.
Gas man. Get a gas man.
And... I need a gas man, a pilot, and a flight attendant.
Oh yeah.
I'm just flying different places. That's all I'm doing. But Navy SEAL pilot and like Dave Chappelle.
I'll give you that.
You want Schwarzenegger, some scientist,
or you want killers? Just give me three killers.
Yeah, you probably. I mean, the reality is you probably go Navy SEAL.
I want Rambo from Rambo 2, Schwarzenegger from Commando, and
who's the other biggest badass? Liam Neeson from Taken.
Yeah, we'll take him. In case I get taken by the zombies, he can come find me. He's got skills.
How many people did Liam Neeson kill in Taken? I mean, it's in the 60s, probably. I mean, he was just killing
people.
He's
over 30. I can tell you that.
This is ridiculous. This is totally ridiculous.
I got a daughter now, so I get it. I will kill.
Very particular set of skills.
I will kill.
I will kill you. I mean, do we call it there? I mean, we're an hour and a half into this thing before we. Well, I mean, I got one more drink. You got one little tiny.
Cheers.
Cheers.
First official video wine pod done.
They got a little drunk. Once we went Frank Solich hieroglyphics and someone digging up things, everything kind of eroded.
Well, we find those people like that the most.
I guess so. I don't know. I mean, we also talked about belly. We had a belly session too, which is good.
But people have been underestimating the belly of late.
Well, here's the thing. We need to wrap this up because what people need to do right now after this video ends is they need to go stay on YouTube and Google Aerosmith Crazy. Like right now.
Huda Media Production.